Okay, Boker Tov. So we're up to Melachim, Melachim Aleph, Perek Gimel. And for the first time, you know, we've been dealing with getting rid of external enemies or potential personalities who might undermine Shlomo's kingdom. We spoke about Shimi Ben Gera. We spoke about who else was killed. Tell me, what's the long list? Who else was killed last week? Yoav was killed. Who else? Yeah, maybe we should just do last week's parak again. We'll see, you know, how long will, you know. So Benayahu ben Yehoyada helped Shlomo to kill a number of people, to take out people who were going to undermine, ultimately concerned they're going to undermine Shlomo's new kingdom. So we've never really met Shlomo. Who is Shlomo HaMelech? What is he about? What are his values? And we're going to see that over the next 10, 11 prakim, we're going to study Shlomo's story. And we're going to see that, for the most part, Shlomo is beloved. Okay, Shlomo is going to build the Beit HaMikdash. Sorry if I gave it away. Shlomo is... Shlomo builds a palace. He reorganizes the kingdom. The time of prosperity and peace, the apex of prosperity and peace in biblical times is during the time of Shlomo HaMelech. David is out there fighting, conquering, expanding. Shlomo is sitting on the kisei and, as we'll see, judging today. And now what was he doing, Maureen? He was also marrying lots of women. So we're going to see that at the end of Shlomo's life, there's going to be some very severe criticism launched against him. And this first parak, I'll say for the most part, is very positive about Shlomo, extremely positive. And even then, we're going to see certain minor indications, subtle criticism of Shlomo. Okay, so let's jump right in. Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph 3:1. Vayitchatein Shlomo et bat et paro melech Mitzrayim. So what does this mean? That he marries the daughter of Vayikach et bat paro. So he reaches out to Paro, melech Mitzrayim. Vayikach et bat paro vayiviyaha el ir David. And he takes the daughter of Paro, he brings her to the city of David. Ad kalato livnot et beito ve'et beit Hashem ve'et chomat Yerushalayim saviv. This is prior to the time when he was going to build the wall of the city and a new palace for himself and the Beit Hashem. So anything interesting about this? We'll come back to this. Rak'am, another piece of information. Rak'am mizabachim babamot. At this time, the nation were bringing sacrifices on a bama. What's a bama? Anybody know what a bama is? Yeah, so these were altars. These were mizbechot that were spread out throughout the land of Israel. They weren't centralized. Okay, originally there was Shiloh and there was Nov, and we'll see there's Giv'on as we'll see in just a second. But there's some central, more centralized places of sacrifice. But everyone, you know, it's like, listen, we're going to have a barbecue tonight. Let's give a sacrifice, a korban to Hashem. So that's like a Sunday afternoon barbecue. Everyone has a little altar in their backyard. If you have a big yard with a swimming pool and a tennis court, you have a bigger altar. If, you know, maybe you have one on your mirpeset. If the building permits it, you know, or the tama, they let you build an extra, you know. So everyone had their own bamot in their backyards. Because there was no bayit built for Hashem at this point in time. Okay, so everything was decentralized. We continue. Vayehav Shlomo et Hashem lalechet b'chukot David aviv. Shlomo loved Hashem to walk in his path, the path of his father. Rak b'mamot hu mizabeach hu maktir. And he, along with everyone else, would sacrifice in these bamot. Okay, this wasn't against halacha. This was permitted at the time. I'll just read to you. There's a Gemara in Masachet Zvachim, which discusses the different periods in time when you were able to sacrifice on a bama and times that you weren't allowed to. When there was a Beit HaMikdash, you were not allowed to sacrifice on a bama. But until the Mishkan was erected, bamot were permitted. When the Mishkan was erected, the bamot became forbidden. They came to Gilgal, the bamot were permitted because they didn't have a Mishkan. When they came to Shiloh, the bamot were forbidden. So, you know, whenever there's a Mishkan or a Beit HaMikdash, you can't do the decentralized religious stuff, but otherwise you could. So this is what's happening in his time. We see also a number of mentions here. The Beit HaMikdash, that's, you know, references. This is, it's building up to it. Vayelech HaMelech Giv'ona. So Shlomo HaMelech goes to Giv'on. Anybody know where Giv'on is? Givon is was a village north of Yerushalayim. Yeah, near Ramot, near Ramallah, near, you know, that whole area. And apparently it's in a village, there's a village today called Nebi Shmuel, Nebi Samuel, and that's where Givon was. Have you been, where is it? I imagine it's in an Arab area, right?
Yeah.
But it's
an Israeli tourist
there. Oh, so, okay, you can go to Nebi, okay. Oh, it's by Kfarat Shmuel.
Yeah.
Maybe I've been there, actually. I've been there before. It's possible I have. I once remember seeing, I went on a tour, Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, we saw, you know, there's a palace that King Hussein of Jordan, King Hussein of Jordan built, you know, it was going to be his summer palace. And Israel still has let him maintain rights to it, but it's literally just a, you know, a concrete shell. And it's really far up northern Yerushalayim, right in between what's today Yerushalayim and you know, Ramallah, etc. Okay, so we're talking about that area north of Yerushalayim. So he goes to Giv'on, which is at this point the largest bama. Shlomo sacrificed 1,000 olot. That's a lot of meat. Okay, that's a lot of meat. I don't want to stop this because then it's going to stop the recording. Okay, but this person's clearly very persistent. Let me just confirm that the recording's still working. It's still working. Good. So the question is, why is he going to sacrifice in Givon? So there are two different explanations. One, the Ralbag says that he's trying to get Nivuah, to receive Nivuah. How do you receive Nivuah? By giving Korbanot. We see other examples of this in Tanakh. Can you think of other people in Tanakh who give a Korban and then they receive Nivuah? One is a non-Jewish character, Bil'am. Okay, another one is also a non-Jewish character, but he's sort of pre-Jewish, Noach. Noach brings korbanot, and he has a nevuah from Hashem. The other explanation for why he's, you know, going to Giv'on is that, as we'll see, this is all about leading up to moving, centralizing everything in Yerushalayim. Now, you can't just say, we're closing down Givon and we're going to go to Yerushalayim. You have to have a final ceremony there. You always have to recognize the old before you move on to the new, right? This is the this is how we do things. So, B'Givon, Yira Hashem al Shlomo b'chalam halayla. V'yom Elohim, and God says to him, he has his dream, Sha'al ma'eten lach. This is a very famous story. What would you like me to give you? V'yom Shlomo. Shlomo says, "Ata asita et abdacha David avi chesed gadol. You have done a great chesed for my father. Kasher halach levanecha beemet uvitztaka uviyishrat leivavimach. Just as he has walked before you in righteousness with a straight heart, good heart vatishualo et achesed gadol azev vatitin lo ben yoshev al kisok hayom azev. You have protected him and you have given him a son, i.e., me." Okay, this is Shlomo. Ve'ata Hashem Elokai. Now Hashem, atayim lachta at avdachad dachad David Abdi. You've appointed me beneath your, my father. Vanochi na'ar katon, and I'm just a young lad. Lo eidat zeit vavo. I don't know how to go out and come. This is referring to military. I don't have any military experience. Ve'avdachad betoch hamacha asher bacharta. Am rav asher lo yimanev lo yisafer merov. And you're serving to me. I'm serving this huge nation. You can't even count this nation. It's so vast. It's so large. So what is Shlomo going to ask for? What's he going to ask for? Wisdom. V'natata l'avdacha. V'natata is a request. Please give me wisdom. Leiv shomea lishpot et amecha. To judge your people. Lehavin bein tov l'ra. To know good from bad. Who was the power to judge this people? Ki sha'al Shlomo at the Vaz. God is very pleased. Wow, that's a good request. You didn't ask for PlayStation. You didn't ask for a new iPhone. You didn't ask for for me to take you to Breishit by the Machtesh. You didn't want to go to Italy for the weekend. You just want to you just wanted some wisdom. This is what a leader should ask for. This is ideally what a leader should ask for, to recognize his own limitations, to recognize that Hashem is the one who has ultimate wisdom and knowledge, and that he needs Hashem's support. Okay, and this is how all good leadership behave. When leaders forget that they are, that they don't have ultimate power, that their judgment can be off, that's when they start to make mistakes and fall. Yeah.
Hadn't you said before that he was wise?
I don't think so, but if you recall, in Perek Aleph, there are a number of points where David gives wisdom to his son. Okay, good. So if you look at, for example, in Bet Vav, David, when he's advising Shlomo, he tells him, listen, Shlomo, you're a smart chap. You're a smart boy. Okay? Vasita kechochmatecha. Follow your wisdom. Ki ish chachamata. You're smart. Okay? And yet, as smart as one is, we also need to recognize that sometimes the smarter you are, the bigger you fall, okay? Because you don't know your own limitations. Can you think of anyone in history or any politicians or anyone who was very smart, but they fell because they thought they were too smart?
Napoleon.
Okay, it's a good example of not being aware, right? He thought, well, if I've conquered all of Europe, I could also conquer Russia. And that's when he met his match with the Russian winter.
Right?
Hmm? He
did the same. He never learned a lesson.
Correct. True. He didn't learn the lesson of Napoleon. Hmm? Anyone else come to mind?
Shaul.
A little bit. Why?
Because he didn't see what was happening around him.
Ah, okay.
He
sort
of banked on the fact that he had a history of popularity.
Well, like Shaul, but his Shaul stems a little bit more from lack of self-esteem, as opposed to, egomania, Shaul doesn't feel so strongly about himself, and then he makes sort of rash decisions, and he's swayed by those around him, but he doesn't have a strong sense of self, as Shaul. So this is, now, this is what's key here, and I want to go back to let's read a little bit more, and then we're going to look for some subtle criticisms here of Shlomo.
Do we know how old Shlomo is when he becomes king?
Good question. I don't know. I don't think there's...
Okay.
I mean, he says, Ki na'ar katon. I'm a young lad. Not clear what that is.
Yeah,
no, he wasn't old. He wasn't, experienced. He wasn't older. He was young. And he got married. But people used to get married very young. Maybe young 20s, 19, 20.
Yes.
Maybe that's how old he was. So he's a fast learning curve. So So God likes this request. Vayomer Elokim Elav, God says to him, Yan asher sha'alta d'davar zeh, v'lo sha'alta l'chayamim rabim. Because you asked for this and you didn't ask for long life. V'lo sha'alta l'cha osher, and you didn't ask for wealth. V'lo sha'alta nefesh oivecha, you didn't ask to destroy your enemies. V'sha'alta l'cha havim lishmo mishpat, you've asked to have understanding, to have wisdom, to have insight, to know how to adjudicate. Hine asiti kidvarecha. I will do as you ask. Hine natati lecha lev chacham v'navon. Asher kamocha lo haya lefanecha. I will give you a lev chacham v'navon. A lev in the Tanakh is not necessarily heart. It could also be mind. Okay, I'll give you great wisdom. V'navon asher kamocha lo haya lefanecha. Navon is also someone who's very wise. Okay? Asher kamocha. Anyone by the name of Navon?
Yes,
Okay, Yitzhak Navon and his grandson or great grandson is a journalist in Makor Rishon, also a very popular and learned rabbi by the name of Chaim Navon. But I do know someone who has the name Navon. It's an interesting. The grandson, great. There's a relation there. Say there is. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, there's some relation. I don't want to misquote. V'acharecha lo yakum kamocha, and there won't be anyone. No one was wise as you before, who came before you and after you. Now this is very interesting that Shlomo is being commended here, not for asking for wealth, not for asking for the death of his enemies, etc. But it's interesting because what does happen to Shlomo by the end of his life? I think the wealth is going to get the better of him, right? And we also saw, just go to that, back to that first pasuk. Sort of stuck right in there. There are no Jewish girls on J-Date. I don't understand. This was it? Bat Paro was the first woman that he's going to marry? It's like it's already, So there's a subtle criticism here. And as much as we're talking about how Shlomo loves Hashem and all these korbanot and he asks for the right thing, in Hashem is saying, wow, it's so good that you've asked for these things and you didn't ask for X, Y, Z, but these are going to be things he's going to end up pursuing later on in his life. So there is, and also the giving 1,000 korbanot is a little bit excessive. There's some subtle critiques here already of Shlomo. Yeah. Okay, Nachon, it could be making an alliance, but the question is how important are alliances, there are other factors involved, that maybe the first wife he takes should be a Jewess, right?
And,
okay, so that we're going to see later on, but I'll just share with you, just to see a parallel here. Go to Perek Yud Aleph, 11:1. Go to Yud Aleph. Okay, V'amelech Shlomo Ahav Nashim Nachriot Rabot V'etbat Paro. And Amelech Shlomo loved many women. Now it's interesting because here in the beginning we spoke about, what was the pasuk it said? It said V'amelech Shlomo Ahav V'yahav Shlomo Tashem. Shlomo loves Hashem. There's a clear parallel between these different points in his life. So he, Shlomo, we spoke about, he goes to Givon. This is part of his ultimately he's going to move everything to Yerushalayim. He's asked for wisdom, and he receives wisdom. Now pasuk kaf dalet. Okay, and soon we're going to see the very famous story of Shlomo acting as a judge. Everyone wanted to seek out Shlomo's face, to hear the wisdom that God put in his heart. So his reputation spreads far and wide. Okay, he has a lot of followers on Twitter, and everyone, and interesting that everyone had access to him. People had access to him. He was accessible. Okay, and that's a good sign. That's a good sign of a leader. I'm reading from I'm back, I'm still in Yud Aleph. I go back to Gimel. Okay. It's interesting. It could have been a continuation. Yes, absolutely. It says you're not allowed to go back to Yerushalayim, to Mitzrayim of all places. There's a restriction on living in Mitzrayim. What is not allowed to live in Mitzrayim? That's what it says in the Torah. Now, how do you square this with the fact that the Rambam, for example, lived in Mitzrayim, the Radbaz, many great sages, there were Jewish communities in Mitzrayim until 1948 when the Jews were mostly kicked out of Egypt. The Cairo Geniza was found in Mitzrayim. So some say, you can't go to Mitzrayim and then come back to Israel from Mitzrayim in the same path that the Jewish people took to Egypt, or go back to Mitzrayim through the same path that we left Egypt. That's one explanation. The second explanation is, there are a number of explanations, is that you can't... Say again, what?
A king was restricted, couldn't have horses.
He broke all of these boundaries. 100%. Nachon, correct. Correct. So pasuk yud gimel. Okay, we're back in Perek Gimel. The gam shalosh alta natati lach, gam osher, gam kavod. So God says, even the things you haven't asked for, I'll give you osher, I'll give you wealth, I'll give you honor. Asher lo haya kamocha ish b'melachim kol yamecha. There won't be a king as great as you, a Jewish king in all your days. V'im telech b'drachai lishmor chukai mitzvotai kasher alach David avicha. And if you follow the path, your follow walk, the following my commandments, I will extend your life. So Shlomo, wow. He asks for the right thing and he gets everything thrown on top as well. Okay, he's doing pretty well for himself. Shlomo wakes up, and indeed this was a dream. So Shlomo gets up. Now he goes to Yerushalayim. He makes a party, he brings more sacrifices, he stands before the Aron, and again, this is closure with the story of Gifon, that he's going to move everything to Yerushalayim. Okay, he's going to move everything to Yerushalayim. The Aron is there, even though the great Mizbeach is in Gifon, ultimately we're moving towards centralization in Yerushalayim. Yes,
sure.
Shiloh was destroyed. Shiloh was destroyed in the time of Shmuel beforehand. And Nov was also destroyed. So now Givon is the central sacrificial altar. Okay, now the very, very famous story of the two women who come before Shlomo. Now notice how they're described. Az tavona shtaim nashim zonot el ha-melech v'ta'amod lefanav. These are two prostitutes. Okay? What do we make of the fact that there are two prostitutes who come before him? Again, this speaks to accessibility, that he was really, to everyone he was dealing with, not just the upper echelons of society, but he was judging, adjudicating, even for the people on the bottom, the lower rungs of the economic ladder. And, this speaks to, again, it speaks to his goodness as a judge and his the fact that everyone would come to him and that he would dealt with tough cases and unusual cases and people who are rich and also poor. Vatomer ha'isha achat. And there are two women. Okay? Two women. We're going to have to read the story very, very carefully. Vatomer ha'isha achat. One woman says, Pi adoni, ani ve'aisha zot yoshvot b'vayit achat. Please, my master, I and this other woman, we dwell in the same home. Okay, we share a home together. Va'eled ima babayit. And I had a child in the house. He byom hashlishi was 3 days later. Lid diti. Vatelet gam isha azot. And 3 days later, this woman also gave birth. Vanachnu yachtav, we're together. Ein zari tanu babayit zulati shnayim anachnu babayit. No one else is in the home except for us. Okay. Vayamod ben haisha hazot laila. This woman here. Okay, well, so number one is talking right now. Okay, woman number one. What should we call her? Should we give her a name? Number one? Chaya? 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 I was thinking, what? Aleph? Okay. Okay, I was thinking, when I teach Mishnayot here between Mincha and Marv, we always different characters. I use, John and Paul and Ringo and
for games.
Yeah. What? No. And so when we need a woman for this, we always use what was John's wife again?
Yoko.
We use Yoko. So let's go with Yoko. Okay. And what should we call the second woman?
Ono.
Okay. Yoko and Ono. Okay. So Yoko and Ono are living together in the same house, two prostitutes, and they have children. Now Yoko is speaking, and she says, "Vanachnu yachtav ein zari tanu b'bayit." Now, okay, what happens? Vayamad ben aisha zot laila asher shachva alav. Now this woman, so now Yoko is still speaking, and she says, "Ono, okay, Ono was sleeping, and she actually squashed and suffocated her, you know, her baby. Okay, chas v'shalom. Vatako betoch halayla. She got up in the middle of the night. Vatikach et b'ni me'etzli, and she took my son. Va'amatcha yishena, and I was sleeping. Vatashkiveu b'cheika, and she took her the baby into her bosom. Ve'et b'na ha'meit yishkiva b'cheiki, and she gave me the dead baby. Whew, terrible. Va'akum b'boker lahinik et b'ni. I woke up in the morning to nurse my son. Ve'hinei meit, and he was dead. Ve'et bonein elav b'boker, and I looked at him. Ve'hinei lo haya b'ni asher yaladati. This was not... It's not my son. Didn't look like him. So this is Yoko speaking. This is Yoko's testimony. Now the second woman, Ono, speaks. Lo, ki b'ni achai, my son is the live one, your son is the dead one. V'zot omeret, and now back to Yoko. Okay. Lo ki b'nei chamid, your son is the dead one. Uveni achai, my son is the live one. Vatadaber na lifnei hamelech, and they speak before the king. So that's all we know. We know 5-6 psukim of testimony. Okay, court cases could go on for years. Trials can go on for a long time. But here we have 6 psukim of testimony. This is all that we're told in terms of how Shlomo is going to assess the situation. So, what would you do in this situation? You do a DNA test. Thank you. You do a DNA test. That's what we would do today. But we don't have a DNA test. So, what are we supposed to do?
Ask witness to recognize
witnesses. You would say again?
Ask witnesses to recognize.
As witness, but there were no other witnesses.
No, but they can say, let's say this baby had dog head, that baby in here
3 or 4 days
old by now.
Yeah, you can't tell so much. You can't tell so much. And I listened to this. This is a real tangent, but there's this podcast I used to like listening to. It's called This American Life. Okay, Etta got me into it, and it's, you know, stories, fascinating stories from people's lives. There's one story about 2 babies who are switched in the hospital, okay? And these, like, 2 families, they live in the same community. One of them happens to be the pastor, like the, you know, the priest or whatever, not the priest, the reverend of the community. And at some point, it becomes known that the babies were switched, okay? And they try to figure out, and apparently one of the mothers knew this, and she didn't do anything about it. And there's this whole discussion of what it was like growing up in the other person's family's home, because they're very different. One was a very religious family, one was more secular. And one of them said, like, listen, I always felt totally left out in this, my religious, the family I grew up with. And she wasn't genetically part of the family. And, excuse me. And you have a whole really fascinating podcast about, you know, once they told the families and they figured this out, you know, what happened to the relationships in both directions? It was wasn't simple. And why the mother hadn't done anything, you know, beforehand. And, you know, did they think that it was, anyway, very interesting, these things that you, how genetics, you know, do influence our personalities later on in history. But that, this is 15, 20 years later, right? This is not... So if anyone's interested, I'll post it to the group. It's a fascinating story and a lot of life lessons from it. But so what do you do here? This is an impossible situation. So what does the king say? Vayomar Melech Zotomer. The king said Zotomeret Zebeni Achai Ubenei Chameit. This one, meaning Ono, says my son is, you know, alive, yours is dead. This one says, lo, ki b'nei chameit, my son is dead and your son is dead and my son is alive. There's no way of resolving this. Vayomer hamelech kechu li charev. Get me a sword. Vayaviu achar lifnei hamelech. They bring the sword. Okay. Vayomer hamelech gizru tayelet achai lishnayim. Cut the living baby into 2. Utnu tachatzi leachat, ve'tachatzi leachat, and give half and half. Right? It's a good compromise. You both want a piece of the cookie, so just split it into two. Right? What's the big deal? Ki nichmeru rachameacha al bena, v'tomer bi aduni tenu la et hayalud hachai v'ameit al temituhu. So the one whose son really was alive, okay, and well, I'm not going to say who this is, whether it's Yoko or Ono just yet. She says, Kini, because she heard compassion for her son. She says, you know what? Please, my master, tenu la tayalud, give her the living child. Don't kill him. And the second one said, neither of us should get it, gezoru. Rather, cut the baby up. Okay, so split it. So what do you make of this at this point? Who would you give it to in this situation? The one who wants him alive? Mm-hmm. Okay, why?
Because she's more sensitive and she's closer to, she has this more maternal feeling probably and doesn't want to see the baby killed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
okay.
Murder anyway.
Okay, Vayara Melach Vayomer Tnula Tayaludachai. So give her, meaning the one who said the baby should stay alive, give her the. She is the mother. Who is this? Anyone know? Is it Yoko or Ono? Not clear. We'll see. Okay. Vayishmu kol Yisrael tamishpat ashushapat haMelech. Everyone heard this. Vayiru mipnei haMelech. They were afraid of the king. Meaning they had reverence for him. Wow. What a wise king. Ki ra'u ki chochmat Elohim bekerbo lasot mishpat. They saw that he had God's, God's wisdom, as an assistant. So, how on earth does Shlomo know that he's right here? Not only does he make a decision, he makes a hachra'ah, as we say in halacha. He makes a decision, I'm going to give it to this mother. He even says more, with more certainty, more absoluteness, this is the mother. It's not just that, sometimes you make an assessment, 60-40, fine, we go with the 60. We don't know 100%, but we're going to go with the best information we have. He is sure that this is the mother.
This is the worthy mother.
This is the worthy mother.
Any woman that would want a child done is so.
This is a worthy mother.
This is the worthy mother. What mother would really want a child killed? I mean, even any age.
Yeah.
Mother's
no, that's what Karen's saying. That's what makes her the worthy mother. That she doesn't want her child to die. She'd prefer he live in someone else's care than to die.
I think also Mary wanted to value his life.
One values life more than the other. Okay, but that's a character thing. But wait a second. But still, who? What if both of them had said, "No, keep the baby alive"? What would Shlomo do then?
No.
What would he have done? What if he had done it? Both of them said, "Fine, split the baby." Then he would have been in. Would have been in trouble.
Yeah.
Anyone ever heard of? I'm trying to think. How similar is this to Prisoner's Dilemma? Right? Anyone know what a Prisoner's Dilemma is? No? This is a famous test case in psychology.
If a person splits, he'll get a lesser sentence. What was it?
Yeah. So there are two people. Okay, two people. How's it work? What are the exact details? Basically, they, one of them is going to, they're essentially told that, If you it's the exact narrative. They're both complicit in or accused of committing a crime, and they're told if you admit, I'm just trying to think the exact details. I don't want to get it wrong, so I'm just going to look it up quickly. Yeah, basically, you have the option of saying that you didn't do anything, or that the other one's second prisoner. One second. And it's a game. There's a lot of psychology behind this. Prisoner's Dilemma, I'm just reading from Wikipedia here, is a standard example of a game analyzed in game theory that shows why two completely rational individuals might not cooperate, even if it appears that it is in their best interest to do so. Okay, so here. Two members of a criminal gang are arrested and imprisoned. Each prisoner is in solitary confinement with no means of communicating with the other. The prosecutors lack sufficient evidence to convict the pair on the principal charge, but they have enough to convict both on a lesser charge. Okay? So a lesser charge, but not the more serious charge. Simultaneously, the prosecutors offer each prisoner a bargain. Each prisoner is given the opportunity to either betray the other by testifying that the other committed the crime, or to cooperate with the other by remaining silent. The possible outcomes are, if A and B each betray the other, each of them serves 2 years in prison. So if they both, you know, say, oh, you know, that person did this, and I, you know, if they both admit what they did, then they'll serve 2 years in prison. If A betrays B, but B remains silent, A will be set free. And B will serve 3 years in prison and vice versa. If A and B both remain silent, both of them will serve only 1 year in prison on the lesser charge. They have three options here. Okay? They can say, A can say, I'm not admitting to anything. And if B admits to something, A gets out free. Okay? And the opposite is true as well. Or A can say, both of them could each say, no, you know, the other person did this and I did this. They both betray each other. And then what do they get? They get 2 years. But if they're silent, what do they get? Both of them would get 1 year. So you have an opportunity here to either rat on the other person. Okay. But the concern is that if the other person rats on you, then you're going to get more years than if you remain silent. So Bekitzur, the point of this game is that you're two rational people will end up causing each other to have more time in prison instead of trying to find a compromise. That's the general notion behind the prisoner's dilemma. You know, in this situation, you have what's interesting here is, so what evidence does Shlomo have here that's relevant? What evidence does he have that's relevant here?
One has an account of what happened and the other one doesn't.
So let's go back to those few psukim for a second. Now, but is the fact that, okay, so Yoko, remember, has an account of what happened. Does that strengthen her case or weaken her case?
It doesn't tremendously strengthen it because it contradicts itself. Why does
Yoko's case contradict itself?
She was sleeping.
Precisely, Yoko was sleeping. She says, I was sleeping when this all happened. Right, so she has a narrative which is somewhat compelling. It sounds compelling at the, you know, when you first hear it, but then when you think about it, it's mufrach me'alav, as we say. There's a question, there's a problem, there's a contradiction. How could she know what happened if she was while you were sleeping? Right. So, so this is the first indication that Shlomo feels that Yoko is not telling the full truth. But there's a second indication in the text. What's the second indication in the text? What's the second indication? This is long before he says, hey, listen, I'm going to, we're going to split the baby in half. What's the second thing? Read very carefully what he sees in the text. By the way, Rashi points out, how did Shlomo know he had a bat kol from heaven? Come and tell him, some voice from heaven. Okay, but we're arguing essentially the second option, that no, Shlomo had tremendous psychological insight. What is it that Shlomo reads in the words of their testimony that makes him feel that the Yoko is not telling the truth? Besides for the fact that her testimony is contradictory. Look at the words very carefully. In Pasuk, we're back to Pasuk. Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Sorry, Pasuk Kaf Bet. Vatomer Aisha Acheret. This is Ono. Lo, ki b'ni achai uvneich meit. My son is alive, and yours is dead. And what does the other one say? Zodomer, lo, ki b'neich meit. Your son is the one that died. Mine is alive. What is it that's more important to each of them, to Yoko and to Ono? To Ono, it's really the focus is on her son, who's alive. To Yoko, it's about, no, your son is dead. See, Shlomo's reading these words very carefully, and again, it's saying, wait a second, what is it that's important to you here? That the other woman doesn't get the baby, or that you get the baby? Okay, so there are two indications here that give Shlomo a sense of you know, more certainty. And this is before he, you know, he even suggests that they cut the baby open. Now, once they, you know, they're going to cut the baby, then it becomes even more revealed, because the mother who, you know, the one who's the mother has rachmanas and would much prefer her baby live, whereas the other one says, no, as long as you don't get it, I'm satisfied. This is what we call being enemy-centered, right? Sometimes where people can be so miserable, they don't really care about happiness for themselves. They just don't want the other person to be more happy than they are, right? As long as they're not happier than I am, then I'm feeling pretty good about myself. That's what it means to be enemy-centered. It's when our lives are not, you know, centered on, you know, good principles, and we're so selfish, we're not able to feel good about someone else's success. Okay, it's all about, as long as we have the same amount, I'm okay. As long as that person doesn't have more than I have. Okay, this is unfortunately often how we think, and it's very important to fight this and to be happy at other people's successes. And even this such a tragic situation, even then you should be, you know, happy that at least she gets to have her child. So this would seem to be what Shlomo is basing his ruling on. There is more, the Leal theorists have a heyday with this story. Okay, there's another article I didn't have a chance to read, which I'm going to take a look at for next week, you know, that offers some more insight. I mean, I guess in a modern day case, I mean, what would happen if we were talking about the 1970s when DNA didn't exist? What would they have done in this situation? Maybe a lie detector.
They wouldn't have suggested killing the baby.
Yeah. Killing the baby. It's interesting that, you know, they took him seriously. You know, is that something that, like, anyone would...
He killed his brother. I mean, he's not a person that's afraid.
So maybe in the wake of all the previous killings, you know, maybe he'll do this too. It's possible also that he was, you know, he's the king. And there's reverence. You know, it's not just like a friend or... Like, this is the king. The king can dictate what happens. Also, he was maybe, you know, no one really knew about him yet. This is one of the first cases, clearly, that he's addressing, and no one knew what to make of his legal theory or how he was going to rule. And maybe that is indeed what, you know, so he was very unpredictable. It was unpredictable. He pulls a card out that no one was expecting. But even then, maybe, I don't know, maybe he was dead serious. Maybe he really was going to, you know, to do this. And he even saw it as a way of punishing one of the mothers for, you know, for stealing another child. You know, he thought this was worthy. So this is Shlomo, and his as you could tell, his popularity, his wisdom is spread throughout the people, and people become aware of his wisdom as a judge, as a chacham. Okay, let's keep reading a little bit more, and we're moving on to Perek Dalet here. We'll just do a little bit, and we'll see. We'll have a list here of his cabinet. Who was in Shlomo's cabinet? Shlomo was the king of all of Israel. These were the officers that he had. Azariyahu ben Tzadok, a Kohen. Azariyahu ben Tzadok is the Kohen. Now this is interesting, because remember, Tzadok... Where's it? I'm just remembering one second. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Tzadok was the priestly line that Shlomo maintained. Eli Choref v'Achia b'nei Shisha Sofrim. He had two secretaries. What a name. Eli Choref. Wow. I don't know, what does that mean? My God is the winter? Like, I don't know. Okay. Yehoshaphat ben Achilud Damazkir. Yehoshaphat ben Achilud. Uvenayahu ben Yodah Tzaviyah. Uvenayahu ben Yodah becomes the Ramatkal. V'tzadok v'Evyatar Kohanim. Ah, interesting. Who's back? Eviatar returned. Remember Eviatar? He told him, go to Anatot.
Yes.
You know, because he had joined the Adoniyahu's rebellion. Maybe he made amends with him. Because again, Eviatar was very close to David throughout his life. V'azaryahu ben Natan al Anitzavim. Eliyahu ben Natan is an Anitzavim. What are the Anitzavim? It could be guards or, you know, or it could be his officers. The Zavud ben Natana Kohen Re'eh HaMelech. Zavud ben Natana Kohen is the king's, you know, close advisor. He's a friend of the king. V'achishar al habayit. Achishar is on the house. He was the butler. V'Adoniram ben Avda al Hamas. Adoniram is the tax collector. Not an envious position. He also had 12 district rulers over all of Israel. They sustained the king. That's very nicely set up. Every month, one region would have to bring food to the king. Okay, so he ate pretty well. Okay. These are their people. Ben Chur Behar Ephraim, Ben Chur and Har Ephraim, Ben Dekar, Ben Kamatz, Uve Shalvim, Uve Chemesh. Shalvim. Shalvim is a kibbutz today. It was a yeshiva tezder in Shalvim. Ben Elon, Ben Hanan, Ben Chesed, Barubot, Lo Shoko, Vachol Arz Chayfer, Ben Abinadav, Kol Nafad Dodar, Tafat, Bat Shlomo, Haytala Isha. Okay, another wife. Tafat, Bat Shlomo. Oh, sorry. Ben Avinadav, his daughter, his wife, was Tafat Bat Shlomo. Ba'ana ben Achilud, Tana Chumigido v'chol Beit Shana Shereitzel Tzar Tana Mitacha L'Yisrael V'Beit Shana Arava M'chola Ad Me'ever L'Yok Me'am. Okay, these are different regions, the different people. Ben Gever B'Ramot Gilad. Ben Gever is in Ramot Gilad. Lo Chavut Ya'ir Ben Menashe Asher B'Gilad. Lo Chevel Arnav Asher B'Bashan. Shishim Arim G'dalot Choma U'Veriach Nechoshet. Achinadav ben Ido Machanaima, Achinadav is in Machanaima, Achimat ben Naphtali, Kamulakachet Basmat bat Shlomo the Isha, he also married a daughter of Shlomo. Ba'ana ben Chushai be'Asher uva'alot, Yosheva ben Baruch be'Yisachar, Shimi ben Ela be'Vinyamin, Gera ben Uri be'Eretz Gilad, Eretz Sichon melech Amri, Ovel melech Hashan, Unetziv Achad, Asher ba'Aretz. Yuda v'Yisrael Rabim kachol Asher alayam larov, Ochlim v'shotim u'smechim. Okay, the Jewish people number were great in number. This is a fulfillment of the Abrahamic promises. Ochlim, and they would drink and they ate and they were very happy. Okay, so this is a well-established, well-run, functional kingdom that Shlomo is creating for himself, both because of his personal charisma as well as his ability to delegate and to organize the kingdom. Okay. So we've done two prakim. We're going to stop here. We will continue with Parakeh next week, and we'll do a little bit more on this court case, and we'll study a little bit more. Yishar koach, everybody. Okay.